Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy New Year, one and all. Welcome to 2016. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We're back for a new year, and we're back with good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. But, Jim, my condolences to you for the fate of your beloved New York Jets, who had a chance to clinch a playoff spot on Sunday, but unfortunately fell a bit short in Buffalo. If it makes you feel any better, my teams were out at the beginning of December.
Those words don't make sense to me. I have erased all football from my memory banks just to spare myself the pain. So,
well, let's talk about a bunch of political news that won't make
something
us upset
cheerier,
at all.
like chaos in the Middle East.
All right, chaos in the Middle East as our good martini. This is from USA Today. Saudi Arabia announced Sunday that it was severing ties with Iran hours after Iranian protesters set fires in the Saudi embassy compound in Tehran. Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir said Iranian diplomats and staff had 48 hours to leave his country. According to the Associated Press, tensions between the Middle East powers have intensified since the Saudis announced the execution Saturday of Sheikh Namir al-Namir, a beloved cleric among Shiite Muslims known as a voice for free Saudi elections during the Arab Spring protests. He was among 47 people executed by the Sunni-led Saudi government Saturday, and news of his death set off an outcry across much of the Muslim world. In Shiite-dominated Iran, angry protesters set fires and destroyed documents at the Saudi embassy before security forces restored order on Sunday. So a lot of back and forth there, Jim, but the Saudis have made it very clear and quite publicly for that region of the world how much they detest the Iranians heading into the nuclear deal and all sorts of other things. So while the Saudis are certainly no choir boys in the region, and we have a lot of reasons to be suspicious of them, they have been very clear about explaining who the Iranians really are. They're actually taking actions while we continue to play footsie.
Yeah, I was about to say that, look, this is, you know, there's a lot of negative connotations to this good martini. But having said that, it's kind of, you know, refreshing to watch somebody stand up to the Iranians pretty vividly and strongly and to actually get their allies to go along with them. I forgot what that looked like. The Saudis undoubtedly had a big hand in triggering this crisis with the execution of that Shia cleric. Indisputably, that's going to exacerbate tensions there. But it seems like the Iranians have a very simple playbook when they're angry, doesn't it, Greg?
Yes.
Take over the embassy and trash the place. Allegedly, some word going around they were trying to take hostages. So it's interesting to see that we have a leadership in this country. You might argue, some people might argue on both sides of the aisle, but certainly amongst this, you know, the Obama, Hillary, Kerry approach to this, that we dare not antagonize Iran, that we dare not respond to anything they do. They're backing off of sanctions for those new missile tests. As a result of that, Iran feels like it's got free rein to do whatever it wants, and that only kind of facilitates instability. So pushback against Iran is a good thing. It's kind of fascinating to watch it come from the Saudis and their allies, and the idea that we've now turned to the point where these other illiberal regimes are the best hope we have for checking Iranian regression.
All right, on to the bad martini, and it's a new year, and President Obama has no new ideas, at least when it comes to dealing with mass shootings and terrorism events in the United States. He's once again going after the guns. This is according to Fox News. Obama said this weekend that he'll meet Monday with Attorney General Loretta Lynch to discuss his options towards curbing gun violence after ordering his White House team several months ago to identify new actions that he can take. The president also said he's taking action because Congress has failed to act. He is expected to use so-called executive orders to tighten federal laws with a focus on small-scale firearm sellers and background checks for gun buyers. The anticipated changes would require the small-scale gun sellers to submit background checks for potential buyers, but such changes are not expected to completely close the so-called gun show loophole, which allows for firearm purchases at such venues without a check. But here's the thing, Jim, further down in the story, existing law states that those who sell guns with the principal objective of livelihood and profit have to get a dealer's license through the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. That means they have to conduct a background check on buyers no matter where they sell, including online or at a gun show. But from what we're hearing in some of these reports, Obama would also go after any sort of transaction from one neighbor to another, for example, with neither one in the gun-selling business. So if he tries to go there, that would seem to be him not just strengthening laws, but completely changing the law, and once again, him having no problem ignoring the Constitution.
You know, if he wanted to start off the year on a bad note, if you were advising him, Greg, and said, what is the worst possible note you could start off this year? Don't you think that's what you'd end up with?
Probably.
I mean, basically, this is a fight that he has had and lost many times in his presidency, right? There is no action. The fact that he can't get Democrats to unite behind this ought to be a signal to him that just as people argue there's a divide between the base and the elites in the party of Republicans, the Democrats have a very similar issue. There are quite a few Democrats who like their guns, and thus there is not a broad base of support for gun control in the Democratic Party. It is very much kind of these, you know, these urban elites, as often is pointed out, people who live in buildings with their own security, people who live in safe neighborhoods, people who don't need to work the midnight shift at 7-Eleven, who see no need for guns in their lives and don't see why other people should have them. I mentioned on Howard Kurtz's program yesterday, there's not a single mass shooter who's gotten his guns at a gun show. None of them have bought their guns from the casual gun sellers described here. And yet, for some reason, this president seems like this non sequitur is not only what the president thinks is the single best response that he's got. It's his top priority heading into the year, which I think indicates just how sad, how far things have fallen and how this president has kind of opted out of the real problems facing the country as he heads into his final year of his presidency.
Jim, it's interesting. I think you might have answered your own question there in the very beginning. I think the reason he keeps going after it is because it's one of the few major issues he hasn't been able to win against this Republican Congress or Republicans in general over the past 7 years. It's one that is obviously the beloved position among the liberal base of the party, and he hasn't been able to budge really anything on this.
Yeah, and I also suppose that once you've, you know, decided to handle the immigration issue by executive order, it becomes very tempting to do that for everything else.
Sure.
And we kind of have ended up in that circumstance where he continues to do real damage to the very concept of constitutional governance by insisting that, you know, no, I have a pen, I'm going to do this by executive order. If the executive branch can set so many things through regulations and the way they choose to enforce the laws, or in the case of his assertion of immigration law, just choose to not enforce a particular law, you end up in a circumstance where we have, you know, like what do you need a Congress for? What's the purpose of it if the president can basically decide to rewrite the law as he sees fit, however he sees fit, whenever? And that's where we've ended up, a country that is, you know, feels like the Constitution is being torn apart by a president who just does what he wants and dares Congress and the courts to stop him. Now, in the case of the immigration executive order, the courts did stop him. We'll see if the, you know, but apparently the interesting lesson of this is that he has learned nothing and he chooses to learn nothing.
He's got a town hall coming up later this week, though, Jim. I'm sure one more speech will do the job.
That'll do it. Yeah, that's the other thing. Also, it's the exact same approach. You know, he's gonna go across the country. He's gonna go to the country. He's gonna give a big speech. He's gonna take prearranged questions from members of the audience. You know.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And there were two huge political events while we were away for Christmas and New Year's break. The one that obviously rocked the political world is the exit of the race from former New York Governor George Pataki. The reverberations are still being felt throughout the political world on that one. Jim, I'm sure you were completely shocked by that.
Who?
Exactly. But seriously, Ben Carson, it's being called a shakeup, being called a mass exodus, call it what you will. His two top and overall quite a few top campaign officials just quit several days before the end of the year, saying they were done. He tried to convince his top figures to stay. Wasn't going to happen. Ultimately, those on the way out say that Armstrong Williams was driving them crazy and that Ben Carson kept deferring to him. Armstrong Williams wanted the communications director to be fired, which Carson wanted to do, and that led to the tipping point for everybody else in a leading role on this campaign. So, Jim, who knows what the rearranging of the deck chairs here is going to mean for Ben Carson, but when this all comes just a few weeks before a caucus that he desperately needs to do well in, it doesn't bode well for the momentum of his campaign.
No, and it's, look, Ben Carson has had a roller coaster of a campaign. I think this, I nominate this as our crazy martini of the day because, one, you know, the entire talk of the Carson campaign needing a shakeup, I think it's a very fair question to ask how much of this is the fault of that campaign and how much of that ultimately is on the shoulders of Ben Carson. A lot of his slide in the polls goes back to the Paris attacks, the San Bernardino attacks. As the race shifted more towards national security, this was a guy who had not spent his life in medicine, had not spent his life in this area, clearly was trying to play catch up, had some answers on this that seemed a little off kilter and all that. But ultimately, you know, the staff can't help you if you go out and you have a bad debate. They can try to prep you more, but ultimately, you know, it's up to you to kind of make that splash. And I don't think that, you know, the staffers around him are that much of a problem. Now, some of us are writing about Armstrong Williams and his limiting access to the candidate and the idea, the problems with that. Oh, back in January 2015, Greg. So we're not exactly stunned by this. But I think what makes this crazy is for all these guys who left the campaign, Greg, like, what is the plan to get hired by somebody between now and the Iowa caucuses? I mean, they had 21 members of his staff leave right around Christmas. What, he's an army of one now. You feel bad for the guy. What's he supposed to do? So, you mean, I can understand the frustration with Armstrong Williams. I can understand the exasperation with a candidate who is not taking criticism seriously and wants to blame the staff and kind of the sense of this cloud above the campaign of this long-promised shakeup. But what's Carson supposed to do now, right? You know, how good do you think you can have an organizing campaign with less than a month before Iowa? They're kind of dooming him by walking away right now. And so I think that's certainly the strangest development in politics. For a guy who was, you know, co-frontrunner not long ago, they talk about a really quick collapse for things of for Carson. We'll see how things turn out when things start voting. But it's really believable that at this point Carson could be kind of an afterthought to this campaign after being the frontrunner not that long ago.
No, that's true. If folks in Iowa see Ben Carson personally putting in your yard signs,
yeah,
probably not a good sign.
Poor guy.
Oh, man. It's been an interesting race, and nobody's even voted yet. But pretty soon. Jim, happy New Year again, and talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.